Is this a new attempt to have more of the Girls Playing Civ Christmas podcast?
Okay, Snotty, you did not hear that.
Imran.
Oops.
Hey, well, I didn't actually hear what you said, so.
Yeah, right.
Woo-hoo. All right. Woo.
Sure you did.
How cute is your mouse?
What?
Oh, boy. Don't let me come over there and hurt you.
Uh-oh.
Run!
Yes, start now. I'll give you a head start. Welcome to the Christmas edition of Polycast, the official podcast of a Polton Civilization site, now with 100% less Y chromosomes. I'm Sol Makalua, and I've kicked Dan, Imran, and Locutus out this week while I investigate one of those big Civ myths that if girls other than me play Civ. No, really. Found at least three others. Or so our co-hosts this week are.
I'm Cardamandua.
This is K-Mad. I'm going to be the one that tries not to giggle.
And this is Nolan Gloria.
Notes, notes, notes.
Is that nuts or notes?
Notes, notes. No, nuts. I deal with those all the time. We have a bunch of female leaders in the game. Well, not a bunch. Let me count. Five? No, six. I think at least one person here who would probably like at least one more Celtic leader in the game. Or at least, like, well, she puts in Britain. I don't know.
Well, I was pretty satisfied. I was pretty satisfied when they brought Boudiccan, but, you know, that's okay.
You know, I got to think about what other female leaders, and I thought of Mulan in China, and I just, like, totally went blank. I'm like, I know there's others, but I can't think of them suddenly.
I was thinking of a couple, like Wu Zhao in China, or Theodora of the Byzantines, who was in Civ 3, or Maria Theresa from the Holy Roman Empire might be fun. I was just thinking of women who actually led their country. Some people would say Joan of Arc, but I think she's just a great general.
Worked for Civ 3, but maybe not so much in Civ 4.
Yeah.
I can't think of any, but I wouldn't expect to. Half of the people in Warlords and BTS, I didn't hear of till I saw them.
Well, I don't know if I should admit to this, but I was a history major in college, so I was supposed to know some of that stuff.
Ah, heavy minor in history, but I had terrible history teachers in high school, so I know nothing. They got me bored on it, and I never... Seriously, I wish that I had an interest in it, but I don't.
How many hours a day do you play, or a week is it?
I don't know, and I don't want to know.
Yeah. I think it depends on the week.
Some of my games, it'll say 70 hours playtime because I'll fall asleep with the computer. And I don't really play it for 70 hours, but it'll say 70 hours on there. And I keep it open when I'm doing other stuff, and it just is ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it depends on the week, how I'm feeling, what my mood is.
Yeah.
That's a very woman kind of way to say.
Yeah. Well, I'll put it this way. I blame Sid Meier, and I have for 8 years now, because my house would be a lot cleaner if I had never heard of him. That's about it. I have dust bunnies under my couch with his name on it.
I think I have dust bunnies under my desk, too.
Well, when things are in testing phases, I find myself playing 12, 14-hour days. And I count lobby time, too, because you can't do anything else.
Yeah.
While you wait for your friends. So I've taken to knitting and beading while waiting for games and ignoring the teenage testosterone surges in the lobby posts.
Sounds like a good solution to me.
I do a lot of hot seat and a lot of single player. Don't get into multiplayer very much just because I don't have that many friends, I guess. Just kidding. And I play a lot with my husband.
I've been playing since Civ 2. My husband got me hooked on it before we were married. He doesn't play anymore, pretty much. He only likes to mod it. If I play multiplayer, it's with him. We're a team against the AI.
I'm the old lady in the crowd, and have been testing Civ games for the past 5 years.
Cool.
Okay.
I love Civ MP, but they hate it when I whine. Why did you pick on me? I wasn't ready for you. And they go, oh, I feel like a crumb for beating on the old lady. Go away. Then this one guy says, no, you're just so much fun to torment, I can't help it. But where they would start flaming one another and everything, there's often a ladies present, a leveling or soothing thing, unless the women start fighting first.
We would never.
It's an option.
We wouldn't get nasty on each other, would we?
And well, I hate to play into the stereotype that women go on and on and on and hop topics every 5 minutes. Yeah, but we kind of did. But hey, the conversation's all passive, so it shouldn't be boring to you guys. We had all the things you probably wanted to know. How we all got into Civ. First time reactions when you post in a gaming site and they're like, oh my god, it's a girl. Ugh. We all play different difficulty levels. We have different ideas about how to go to war, how not to go to war in some people's case. We all track different ways up the technology tree. Just like a typical group of Civ players. We're just girls instead of guys. Who knew? Girls, Civ. Here we are. Getting into Civilization. Well, already since one common theme, almost everybody seems to fit their husband or boyfriend or whatever, like, ooh, play this game, honey.
Yeah, that's exactly how it happened.
No, I would actually say that's not me, but then I just remembered it wasn't my boyfriend, but it was a male friend of mine. It's like, oh, you really have to try this Civilization game.
No, I was mad at him. He bought it the Saturday before the Oscars. He had promised to watch the Oscars with me. They're on a Sunday, I think it is.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's Sunday, yeah.
And he had promised to watch it with me because it's more fun to watch when you can make fun of the tacky outfits.
Absolutely.
And he kept saying, well, I'll save it after this turn and I'll be in there. And he said that for 2.5 hours. Oh. This is for Civ 2. And, of course, he wasn't reading the manual because he's a guy. So I borrowed the manual and read it during the commercials. And I kept saying, how the heck do you do this? This makes no sense. This is too complicated. And he kept laughing and saying, oh, I'll show you later. So then I picked it up to try to figure it out because it looked so complicated and I got into it. And I eventually mostly forgave him for breaking his promise, and I did marry him, knowing he was addicted to Civilization, which surprises some people. But I'm still a little bit bitter about the Oscars incident.
Yeah, when I first started dating my husband, he played a lot of computer games because he hadn't had a girlfriend before that time. He was playing a lot of games, and he couldn't get the balance between girlfriend time and computer playing time. So I come over and he'd be playing his computer games and I get so upset about it and be like, come on, let's go do something real now. And finally he just started introducing me to all his games one by one, and one by one I told him they were stupid until we got to Civilization, and it was Civilization 3, and I thought, this is the dumbest game ever. And then he got really excited about the hype with Civilization 4, and I played that one with him and really, really liked it. So then I got addicted to it a little bit more than he was.
First time forum posting. So, okay, we know how the husbands and the boyfriends like it, but how was it when you first started posting in the forums? Were the guys really believing that you were a girl playing, or were they like, no, pics. We don't believe you can see pics.
Well, I lurked on the forums for a really long time. I just read what my husband wrote. I had my name and everything. I just didn't say anything because I was really afraid. Because I'd only been playing for a little while, and everyone else knew so much more than me. And if you see, I still am way low on the totem pole because I'm a lurker. But a couple times, I think the guys are like, are you a DL? What's going on? And they don't believe I'm a girl until I posted my picture.
Well, we can post just about any kind of picture we like.
That's true.
Exactly.
I'd rather post one from 1980.
I don't really care if they believe I'm a girl or not, because I'm just somebody posting words on the internet.
Yeah.
And if they ask me if I'm really a girl, I say I am and I'm happily married, so what does it matter? I'm not going to flirt with you.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Usually, though, I find that the guys are a little bit more, I don't know, they're kind of rude sometimes and a little bit disrespectful to all their fellow players and posters. And they say some things to me that I guess I get a little bit offended, because in real life, if they said that to me, I'd really make them hurt. I don't know. That's just me and my newness to the online posting world, I guess.
I try not to get into flaming on posts, and when I do, I really seriously flame, and people go, oh, my God. 'Cause I'm kind of weird. I've been posting on boards for different games for a long time, but I registered at Poly in 1999, and I have like 35 posts there because I just read and lurk there.
Yeah.
And at CFC, I have over 3,500 posts because that's where the newbies tend to ask questions, and those are the questions I know the answers to. So I just have different personalities on the different boards, but I read them both. And like on some of the older games I used to play before, the online games, I had thousands of posts because I just get to talking.
Right.
But I don't care if people think I'm a guy or a girl, and I don't get into flaming debates with people. And, you know, my parents brought me up, you don't talk about religion or politics with your friends. So if threads go off into that direction, I just quit even reading them.
Right.
But if somebody ticks me off or is rude to somebody else, I'll lay into them. And people are like, oh my gosh, they made Gamehad mad. Because if you save it, then people really notice and pay attention. But it's better than not having to use it.
Engaging in multiplayer.
The multiplayer lobby is a location that has attracted a lot of the youngsters these days. And
oh boy.
Those folks tend to be a lot more profane, and I don't like to hang out there waiting for someone to play with from other games.
Do they even type full sentences?
Well, what they do type, it doesn't even have correct spelling. It's all shorthanded spelling and very insulting. They have no intention to even play the game. They just want to create a rude situation for everyone else to waddle in. So I tend to wait for games on Yim with people I know. But it is a very testosterone-driven younger crowd in the multiplayer group. And I haven't seen too many ladies, but most of them are younger. I think it's a gender thing. Women in my age bracket were a little bit more sensitive to the needs of the male population. And it's a different upbringing.
Well, I imagine the like first-person shooter lobbies are even worse.
They are, trust me.
Ugh. My husband hates forums for every kind of games. He thinks that they're all full of flaming and no useful information. And then he'll ask me something about Civ, and I'll say, wait, hang on 2 seconds, and I'll go search the answer that I know exactly where to find it. And he'll be like, oh, wow, how do I mod this? And I don't even care about modding, but I know where to find the answer within 3 minutes. Because the boards are set up well, and there are people there that know so much and share what they know. So then I can find it for him, and he's like, oh, they do have a use. But does that make him read it? No, he just uses me as a search queen.
I think there are a lot of husband-wife combinations who play. Even on the ladder in Conquest, it was very common for a husband and wife team.
Well, it's just easier because you learn their playing styles and you know exactly how to win them if you're playing against them. And you know, like, each other's strengths. So if you wanted to team up against the AI, it's really easy as well.
Well, in a multiplayer scenario, you pick up all the tricks and the tech routes and everything else, all the techniques from your friends and your clan. If they're in a mood for a test game, it's really great. Or even to watch them during a multiplayer game.
You can watch?
Yeah, all you have to do is click on the other person's city to see what they're doing. You can do that in single player, too, if you're teamed with the AI.
Oh, I see. While you're playing. I thought you meant while you weren't in the game. I was like, oh.
Well, that happens, too. If you're killed, you can hang around. Some people get so involved that they just don't want to leave. And others are so peeved that they're delighted to take off and they go to the lobby and vent.
Yeah.
Man, so-and-so did such-and-such, and it's a...
Well, some people go there because they're in a bad mood, they want to get their aggressions out, and that's exactly the time that you shouldn't be over there when you could lose, and it's going to make your day worse.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm being too logical.
No, it's just that they're all like thinking, when I get home, I'm going to go stomp something into the ground.
Yeah.
And then you get stomped.
Kill somebody.
Oops.
It's kind of fun to visit while you're playing the game. It doesn't always have to be another human being, though. I think instincts for that.
Yeah, I never thought about doing that.
Are for humans to play with humans in the multiplayer game. But as I've aged and sometimes I'm tired, and it's nice to run for an hour against the AI or even team with an AI versus the AI if you want. You quit when you've had enough.
Yeah, that's how I and a friend of mine play quite often. Well, when I can, when he's available, he works a lot. We don't want to play against each other because we like each other and we don't want to get mad at each other, so we just go stomp on the AI.
I wonder if that's a girl thing.
To be more diplomatic. I don't want to beat you. I want to beat something with you. No, because actually I have no problem beating people in multiplayer.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't know them as well. Maybe it has something to do with it. If you're my friend, I don't want to beat you.
Yeah, yeah. I would totally feel guilty having a battle with my husband, even though I probably lose. So that's also part of it. I don't really want to lose to him.
Well, one of my co-hosts, when we were setting up the thread for this, had commented that myself and Femme weren't exactly known for a feminine playing style. And I was like, wait, on one hand, I'm complimented. On the other hand, what do you mean feminine playing
yeah,
style?
What
feminine
exactly is that?
What's that supposed to mean?
Playstyles.
I'm a castle builder, which means I stay home, I get as big as I can, and defend to the hilt. I'm less likely to go looking for trouble.
Oh, so you're an isolationist.
Well, I'm a castle.
Okay.
I like to diplo if it's an allowed feature in our game setup.
Okay.
The recent group of multiplayers have really tweaked the finer edge, the outer edge of the learning curve, and I haven't had enough time, really, and enough games to have refined my playing style. So it's safer you get to stay in the game longer if you don't go looking for trouble.
Yeah, except me in multiplayer, I tend to go looking for trouble. Because what happens is there's always one player you'll see sort of in the middle bottom, and they'll slowly start going to the top, and then they'll stay there. And they'll start getting bigger and bigger. And you know, if you don't start taking over other people, they're going to get there first, and you're not going to be able to stop them.
So you don't go for them, you go for other people to try to catch up to them?
It depends on where they are. If they're next to me, then I could go try to get them. But if they're on the other side of the map, especially on a Pangea, I have to get other people first.
Yeah, true.
I have to go through other people anyway. I might as well conquer them first.
Yeah, I might as well absorb them on the way.
Because I'm going to need the money and the tech, and if they're getting too far ahead, I'm really going to need the money and the tech, and the land space, and the units. And
yeah, I heard this rumor, land is power.
What civilizations do you attack first? So the guy on the bottom? The guy nearest you, or do you head for the leader?
I tend to go for the guy on the bottom, because if somebody is really low down, probably they're having trouble anyway. You could probably use the land better.
Yeah.
That happened in a pit boss game I have going, where there was somebody who was stuck on the coast on this Pangea, and there was only myself and one other human player next to them, and they were way low at the bottom, and I and the other player split their territory. Also because this guy, I think, was getting sick of the game, and he's just like, oh, kill me, somebody.
Yeah.
But we now have the problem that there was somebody that we weren't paying attention to on the other end of the map who has teched up into gunpowder, and we just got there. That's only because about three or four players got together and said, okay, we have to start sharing things, because he's about to steamroll over us. So it goes differently every time. Sometimes you're on the winning side, and sometimes you think, oh, I'm doing well, I can go attack any minute now, and then someone rolls over you with a stack of death.
How does this work out in single player?
Well, my answer definitely shows I play single player, because the guy I attack first is a guy that nobody else likes, so that the other people don't get pissed off at me for attacking their friend.
Yeah.
Because I tend to go light on power for a long time, and I don't want everybody else coming and dogpiling on me when I'm already in a war. But then once I decide I'm going to go to war, I over-prepare for approximately 4,000 years, so that when I do declare war, I have enough stacks of death that I can take 48 cities on one turn, and the guy's dead in two turns, and I don't have war weariness issues. It's ridiculous. Javi says I over-prepare to an extreme extent, and it's not really that bad, but it is really, really bad. And I cannot axe rush to save my life, because I need to have 48 more of each different kind of troop than anybody who is sane would need. But I definitely can't attack somebody who four other civilizations like, because then I'll get a minus one with everybody. And even if I'm at plus 13 with Pakal, I don't want a minus one because red clashes with my hair. I'm like, I'm worried about that, about diplomatic negatives. I like totally freak out.
Well, in single player, I'll usually play something where there's continents, or even if it's on a more of Pangea or a Terra map, I'm always eyeing my closest neighbors up to see which of them I could absorb early. Because when you have everybody on the Pangea and everybody has about the equal amount of territory, it's a stalemate game the whole time. If you don't have to have a lot of momentum, but if you have just a little momentum and you get it early, you can get to the goals a lot faster. And that's something that I picked up over from multiplayer, because I used to be a lot more of the castle type. I do that sometimes in multiplayer, actually, when I probably should be preparing for a war. I just want to sit here and build stuff. And I do that in single player, too. That's a problem I had in one of the BTS League games, is because I just sat there and built, and then, tunk, I got totally run over. I thought I was ready. I wasn't. Oops.
Yeah, I think in single player, it's really important to really, at the very beginning of the game, get as much territory as you can. I think that gives you a huge benefit over your neighbors. I always like to figure out where my neighbors are really fast and then just start expanding in their direction. And then they don't have as much room. They can't get their techs up as fast. Then a war a little bit later is way easier to win.
Well, I expand in their direction, but to me, an early war is get steel.
Yeah.
So I don't go to war a little bit later. I go to war a lot later. But I do expand really aggressively and just hope that I can be nice enough with them that the close board attentions won't mess things up. And if I put my mind to it, the close board attentions get really bad, then I'll just flip their city and then the close board attentions go away. That's really convenient and stupid, kind of. Because you'd think if you take away one of their cities, they'd be a little mad, but instead they totally forget that your borders used to be too close. Oh, problem solved.
Gotta love that AI.
Oh, you can have that city, please. It's on us.
City naming.
The animations are great for the nukes and the spaceship.
Yeah.
I tend to go for the spaceship victory all the time.
I'm old school. I really wish it was still a 2D game because I get dizzy, I have equilibrium issues, and I just would prefer a 2D game, but I know I won't get it because 3D games sell more. I do want it to keep selling so that it stays on the shelves and they make new ones so I can deal, but in a perfect world, I wouldn't have to have 3D. But, you know, it's cool to zoom in on the sheep and the piggies and the elephants. They are cute.
Whenever I show, like, my little brothers and sisters the game, I always do that. I really like to show them the sheep. And, like, look, it's such a fun little game. Kids are like, really? That's kind of funny.
Well, it took me the longest time to notice that if you have them pastured but not working, you're not working the tile, then they run around like crazy.
And they jump.
They're like, oh, we're free. We can jump around. They're so cute.
I know. We're such girls.
And the best thing in the world, this is probably pretty girly, if I see pigs and iron located such that I can get them both in the same city cross, I have to do it. No matter how crappy the terrain is next to it, no matter how many cities I already have, or how many pigs or iron I already have, I have to do it and I have to name the city Pig Iron. So I have had cities where I had Pig Iron North and Pig Iron South. And I have to turn to Hobby if he's sitting here playing WoW. I'm actually sitting in his chair right now. And if he's sitting here playing WoW, I tell him, honey, I just founded a city that has you-know-what in it. And he goes, pigs and iron. Yeah, I got pig iron. I got all pig iron. And he just, you know, kind of rolls his eyes and laughs every single time because he is good to me. And he knows that it makes me giggle. I love the pigs. They're the cutest little. They're great. The pigs are totally cute.
I thought it was just me that liked to do that.
Do you rename your cities?
I rename a lot of my cities in some games. Some I don't. A lot of them I do. My capital is usually Peepsville because my username is K-Mad Candy. The candy is because I'm a sweet tooth. And those Easter candy peeps, the marshmallow ones, are awesome. Do you guys rename your cities?
No, not usually.
Very occasionally I've started to.
I do to make me giggle. I just like to giggle while I play. If you guys read my city names, you'd be like, what is wrong with this person?
You were talking about Peepsville.
Yeah, I named my capital Peepsville because I love the candy peeps from Easter. So my capital is usually named Peepsville, and I have the Candyland Empire. Sometimes, but very rarely, I name all my cities after candy. I actually have saved, for if I want to use it, a civilizations.txt XML file that has all the city names that are named after candy that I made. I found some website that'll put all the city names in the right format that you could just insert it into that file. So I can just pull that up and not have to rename them all. So that's pretty cool. But I don't use it all the time. Usually I name them based on this range. You know, like I'll have crabby cows for a town that has crabs and cows, or, you know, spicy rice, stuff like that.
I've never done that before, but maybe I should try.
Well, it's just, it's fun.
Or after you capture a city, you rename it. This was supposed to be my spot, dang it.
Or like, yeah, like new whatever, because I had to move the town of whatever one square over because they placed it in some stupid place and messed up my pretty dot map.
My husband makes sure that everything's exactly the way it would have really looked. And he never changes the names of a city to anything other than what they really could have been. And he'll go through and change the list names because he doesn't think they're historically accurate. He was even more of a history major than I was.
Well, if it drives you crazy, you might as well change it permanently.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
If it's going to drive you nuts to see something that you think is wrong.
Well, yeah. Some of the people that play or from the countries that are in the game are like, that's not the right name. So, and they fix it.
We especially hate the Native American city names. Like Poverty Point? Are you kidding me? Those ones we always change.
Well, there's been a lot of discussion about the Native American concept of civs. Which one was all the different styles of the Native tribes? Their ways are not the same. And some didn't even have cities, and others, you know, had the pueblos. And what do you do with this? And who's the leader to choose? So they just went generic.
There's a great thread on city names on Civ Fanatics, but it's hidden in the Warlords board. But the guy who did the city name list for Warlords and Beyond the Sword posted in it, and he gave the list of all the new BTS names and his notes to himself on why he put on what the city is. So it kind of gives you insight on why he picked it or why he changed it. Like, he changed a bunch of the Indian names. It started out with people complaining about different cities and why are they in here and why is this and why is that. And then he shared some of why he did what he was doing.
I think I was the first complainer.
I thought that was interesting. I don't even know from one city to the next, but I thought that was cool seeing what he thought and why he did some of the things he did. But of course, stuff like that is going to be controversial.
Difficulty levels.
On the latter, I find myself set at normal all the time, but in practice games, we've been going for Monarch.
I usually play on Noble.
I literally play them all because I play the Hall of Fame Gauntlets. So some of them are on Settler, and it's a blast because you can see how much you kill the AI. We had one, I forget if it was on Settler or Chieftain, where the goal was to get, this is in Vanilla or Warlords, as early diplomatic victory as possible, but it was before the AP. And I barely squeaked in at 10 BC. I didn't think I was going to get an NVC, but I did as close as possible to the deadline. And, I mean, this is on the easiest level, so it's not really much of an accomplishment, but I was all proud. There was a gauntlet for deity for the same thing, to try to get the earliest possible diplomatic win. And I didn't even finish that one. I didn't win the settler one, but I finished it in time. I did not finish the deity one on time. I didn't finish it for, like, several months afterwards. It took me a million tries, and I was even handpicking my opponents, and I kept losing, but not getting rated as Dan Quayle, because when I lose on deity, I get rated as Ethelred the Unready, so I'm a good loser. But I finally got my deity diplomatic win on One City Challenge, because that's the only way I'll ever play deity, because them having two settlers is too much of an advantage for somebody who cannot go to war and get their land, because One City Challenge, I know I never need any more land. So it's a big way to totally cancel out their two-seller advantage. And so I have to tech to mass media as fast as possible. I have to build the UN myself because I'll never be second in population if somebody else builds it. So I finally won that one, and then I finally won another one with random opponents. But, I mean, even still, that's not like I can't win DD as a normal game. I can only win DD in this one circumstance of going for a specific victory type and being one city challenge, so that doesn't really count. I can lose on all difficulty levels.
Oh, me too.
Usually I play Noble if I'm trying something that I think will be hard, Monarch, and then Emperor if I'm doing One City Challenge. Because that I do a lot, and it ends up being easy.
Well, one of the few times where I've played Deity, except where I'm just torturing myself with how much I'm going to lose painfully, it was actually one of the Realms Beyond games. I didn't do a report and turn it in, but it was this one where you were Rome, and there were all these barbarians, and you didn't know until you started.
Oh, yeah!
Yes, where you were stuck on that continent, and there was no other way to get off. You had this huge territory of barbarians. That is also how I learned to like slavery, too. And I'm looking at that in the barbarians, I'm like, this is why I don't play Deity normally. I normally play around Noble, although I've kind of slipped in the past couple of months because I've been playing Warlords level for the Tri-League tournament stuff, and I'm actually glad I'm not playing Intermediate level because I think most of the times I won, it's been by luck.
Realms Beyond had another Deity event recently where you weren't stuck alone. We were a Toku.
No.
And we were on a continent with Mal and with Julius. And Juana and Isabella were on the other continent, and in my version of it, and I was the only one this happened to, Juana and Isabella stole all 7 religions. I'm playing Deity back when it had the lowest happiness levels. I think they changed that in BTS. And I had no temple options, no state religion options at all. It was harsh.
Dang.
Mal killed me in like 500 AD or something. I lasted for a while. I lasted longer than I thought I would, but he killed me. Declared war at least. He was mean.
Interest in history.
I say that if people don't have an interest in history, then they're learning the wrong stuff. They need to find their own little niche. Because everybody likes it, they just don't know it.
Well, like the first time I met, who is it, Justinian? And Beyond the Sword, I said to my husband, oh my gosh, she is way too skinny. And he just looked at me and said, well, he is the one that they had the plague named after. And I'm like, what plague? He's like, the Justinian plague. You know, he kind of expects me not to know that stuff, but he's still like, how can she not know that stuff? Because he knows I'm not stupid, but about history, I'm really stupid. So I went to Wiki, the Fount of All Knowledge, and I found out about it. But I'd never heard of the guy.
Huh.
I just knew he looked skinny. Hattie I'd heard of. Gandhi I'd heard of.
I studied early art history, and I've kind of stuck into the archaeological aspect and studies of the game. I wanted to be an Egyptologist and specialize in pottery.
Nifty.
I wanted to be an Egyptologist until I realized I'd have to spend a lot of time underground. Then I decided I didn't like that anymore.
In hot weather.
I think my mom said almost exactly the same thing about that. She loves Egypt. If you made her a mod that was just playing Egypt, she'd be so happy. But she, ooh, dusty, ew. Spiders, ew.
Yeah.
Spiders? Did you say spiders?
Yeah, I really wanted to be an archaeologist. And I was like, wait a minute. That goes against my whole philosophy of life. Being dirty, sleeping outside.
Would you be interested in visiting any of the civilizations that you've played?
Oh, totally.
I still want to go to Egypt and Rome.
Oh, yeah. I want to go everywhere.
Yeah, I want to see all this stuff for real.
Yeah, all your great wonders in real life. That'd be cool.
Yes.
I've got seen the Great Wall.
Yeah, that's a nice one. I saw a brick of the Great Wall.
Bricks.
When they came on tour.
I don't think I've seen any. My parents have seen like 5. They travel all the time. My brother went to China last month, and he played Civ 4 for a little bit, but his computer won't really handle it. So they were going to go see the Great Wall. I said, okay, make sure you stay on the same side of it. You know, you got to watch out for the barbarians. He's like, oh, yeah. And he reported back. He was fine. He didn't see any barbarians. He was okay. If I know for sure that I'm going to put some wonder somewhere, I have to put a sign on the map to remember not to put another national wonder in there and mess myself up. I am the queen of putting signs on the map. Oh, I put a million signs up there.
I probably need to stop doing that in Pit Boss games so people don't read my signs.
Luckily, the AI can't read a darn thing.
Oh, you mean like the sign that says, start here to attack.
Raise, reset all over here, raise, replace, keep. I send missionaries out sometimes as scouts if I get the later religions and I'm not going to use it. I'll name it I Am a Spy, Don't Use Me, to remember not to use it because I'm forgetful. And they don't ever close borders or send it out because they don't read it and realize it is a spy. And this is after they have writing and alphabet and literature. So they know how to read, but they don't read my unit name.
War strategies.
If I am in a war and I know it's coming or I'm going to start one, if you're Monty, I'll let you come gas yourself out against my cities. And then I'm taking it to you. I don't want you pillaging my pretty cities. So I'm going to you, and you're just going to have to deal with it. And then I'll face the war weariness because I don't care. I don't want you messing up my pretty little towns. So when the war comes to me, I don't really like to defend.
That makes sense.
Yeah, there's advantage to taking it to them, at least on their stacks.
Mm-hmm.
There's a stack there, and you know they could do a lot of damage. It's good to weaken them, especially if they're sitting out in the middle of the field and you could snipe at one of them. And sometimes even if you're down to just a couple of units, but they're less units than you, and you probably still want to attack them because you have a little bit of an advantage by being the attacker, instead of just letting them sit there and hit on you, unless you know that they're a little outdated and you have good defenses.
Hmm. Like Monty.
Yeah, but then after that, you definitely want to go get them back before they build back up.
The war weariness is hell.
Have you ever taken an enemy city, decided you didn't have enough units to hold it, and abandon it, and then go back and take it again and bleed down their units?
That just sounds like a waste of time to me.
I was in a pit boss game, and that technique worked very well.
I haven't done it to get rid of their units. I did it once after reading about it on the board so that I wouldn't lose my units that were trying to defend it, because I knew that I would. So I just pulled out of it to let him have it. I never thought about doing it for that reason. Interesting.
I've only done it a couple times.
Oh, this pit box game I was in, we decided that taking cities after a few times cut down their population number of the city, and then you can pillage the land around it, so when they do get it back, it's not really running properly, then you get all of their workers. You can manage a big sieve that way. And they keep sending help to fix it up, and then you can get free workers off of it and a couple of other advantages, and it turned out that against human players, we just decided that leaving the city empty was a lot more thoughtful than either of us occupying it.
I was at war with Justinian last night. He did not leave me a single worker to poach by the time I was done.
Sure.
Because, of course, I had to redo his land because he had it improved wrong. What a dork.
I think the only time I've done trying to bleed off their units in the city was kind of unintentionally usually. Because it's usually when I think I'm taking enough units on a cross-continent thing to get another continent, and then I land in their city, and even if I'm ahead of them in tech, like say I've landed with infantry, and they're still on gunpowder, and then I don't realize that they also have about 11 billion of those units. And they're like, oops, there goes my whole fleet. Time to refill.
Most powerful unit.
If I have Kreaser Redentor spies, because I can change their civics and that is totally overpowered and it totally does not cost enough espionage points, in my opinion. It's ridiculous.
Note to self, must try this.
I find the workers the most powerful unit in any era.
Oh man, Gandhi's got the best UU in the game.
Yeah, that one extra move, just more helpful than I think people realize.
And he's got a really pretty color too. I like being India.
This one pit boss game I was in recently, we're doing a postmortem on it now at the Poly Forum. We had a stack of 14 workers to make instant roads, railroads deep inside enemy territory, and I never thought of workers as tactical weapons.
I have done that, taking workers along, especially if I'm attacking somebody early, or if there's a gap between our borders, and I know I want to get my units there faster, I will do the workers and start roading towards them beforehand.
Oh, yeah, bring along the Corps of Engineers.
Exactly.
There's a new city name for us. The worker building city can be the Corps of Engineers.
Artillery in every era is also really powerful. Because you get a stack of enough of them together, and it doesn't have to be a large number of them. It can only be like five of them. But working together, they can bring down the city defenses so fast, and also on a city that's really well defended, you could sacrifice them for collateral damage to get them down.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't lose nearly as many units going into heavily defended cities.
Or spies, the overpowered unit can do it too.
Yeah.
I suicide more siege weapons now than I used to if I go to war. Before steel, I mean, if I go to war really, really early, they die more now than they used to for some reason. I don't get lucky. But they're still very useful.
Well, spies make wonderful Scots.
Oh, yeah.
The barbarians don't eat those up.
They can pop guarded barb huts, and they can get on caravels before astronomy. Now, they don't necessarily get good results like scouts do, but scouts can't pop the guarded huts because they can't fight the warrior. But the warrior doesn't realize the scout's there. He lets him move on the spot.
Oh.
So you can pop astronomy from a hut with a spy on a caravel.
I hadn't thought to try that, actually.
Yeah, I posted that the other day on CFC, and a bunch of people didn't realize it, that they could pop guarded huts. Because a lot of people are like, oh, I need to get astronomy before I can pop the guarded huts. Now you don't. It's pretty cool.
It would probably help if I played a game up into that age more often.
That's my problem, too.
Playing morally.
We had a discussion, I think it was a Civ Fanatics show that started, about playing morally. At least from what I've heard so far, I think that we women playing do tend to play a little more, oh, I can't do that to them, than the guys would. Because I think a lot of times we go, oh, I'm not going to attack them, the guys will just roll straight over them.
Well, I will stay in slavery until 3000 AD.
I think I play morally sometimes just because it's pragmatic. Sometimes I don't choose slavery because of the slave revolts. Or I like the UN global things like the freedom of speech and free religion, whatever, just because I like the happiness bonus.
I love slavery. I will rip my people away all the time. I'm just addicted to it. Doesn't feel very moral, but, you know, that's why it's there. I love Apostolic Palace because it lets me end wars. And then to be moral, I just end them because I wasn't ready for it yet. I don't not attack people because it feels mean. I don't attack them because I'm afraid somebody will attack me back. Self-interest.
Yeah, just pragmatic, I think. It just seems a logical thing to do sometimes.
Yeah. I'm not being nice to them. I'm being a wimp and protecting myself. But I don't feel guilty over my citizens anymore. I see all these people pissed about they don't want to use slavery. And I'm just like, I didn't used to understand how powerful it was. But now, man, I try to stay in it forever. If people are starting to learn emancipation, I'm like, no, no, don't learn democracy. I don't want you in emancipation.
It was that Realms Beyond game with the barbs on deity that did it for me. Because it's like, well, I could be nice and not whip you, but if I don't, you're going to die anyway. So
now that game, I did not rename the capital to Pig Iron, even though it did have pigs and iron. I don't know if you remember, but I do, because I had pigs and iron in the same cross. And I did say that I got pig iron, iron, pig iron, iron, pig iron when the iron working came in. But I didn't rename it because it was capital. That was cool today. Until Mouse stole it from me.
Especially early on, it grows so quickly that you don't even notice almost, at least with slavery.
Yeah.
But then I get to the point where other things are more useful than slavery.
On random events.
I usually do.
Yeah, I've been turned on most of the time. I think it's only been in a few comparative games lately where it's been turned off, and I'm like, I miss them.
I like the events.
Yeah.
I think they're a good inclusion in the game.
And I like the quests, although I've lost like 3 quests to the AI. And every time I'm like, I can't believe you did that.
I really like
the Holy Mountain one.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I really like the Holy Mountain one, but it's really hard to get.
Can you give me a hint, a clue?
I just settled one next to Cyrus once in the most junky desert location. It was total crap, so I settled in and then gave it to him. And he took it. He shouldn't have. But I got the happiness and kept it, so.
Well, that's good.
One needs an indicator. Like, take the fog of war off that tile so we know which mountain. Especially if we're playing on a mountainous map.
Mm.
Which mountain again? There's like,
Well, I got it once when the mountain was in fog of war, and it showed me the mountain, but nothing around it. But you could tell from fog gazing that it looked like it was ocean around it. And now there were islands close enough that I could get it within the cross. So I settled it, and it was fine. But I've seen a picture of one case where the island could not be gotten in any city radius because of how culture will only spread 2 tiles across water. And that everything within that was going to reach it within two tiles was not settleable. It was ice and junk, so that was a wasted realm.
Pre-war strategies.
Do you ever get two civs to fight each other to weaken each other before an attack?
Well, I have this little diplomacy problem where when they come asking me for stuff, I'm usually like, no, research it yourself. So I'm usually not good enough relations with somebody unless I happen to have the same religion. And then they're not next door to who I need for them to attack.
I absolutely do it. I concentrate on getting them to like each other or getting them to not like each other. If it's more advantageous for somebody to not like somebody that I'm going to attack later on, I'll try to bribe them or use spies to get them out of the other guy's favorite civics. If I have enough points, Christo Redentor is priceless for that in late game. There's one example. Churchill hated Hattie and I needed Hattie's pigs in a culture game. So I gifted him flat out education and liberalism, philosophy, whichever one. One of the prereqs and liberalism so that he would go free religion and then he would quit hating her. Because the reason why he hated her was faith. And he did, and then I got my pigs. But if they didn't like each other, then I would get a negative for trading with this worst enemy and I would get beat up. And I do the same thing trying to get them to not like each other if I want them to fight with each other so that it's make my life better.
Yeah, I guess it's my player weakness. I don't usually think of diplomacy as a tool. I usually just think of big stack of death as a tool.
Well, I'm good at it because I have to be. It's self-preservation because I'm not good at war.
Yeah, I have a lot of practice of politics from just my job at work, so it comes very naturally when I'm playing Civ.
At what point in the game? Because that question has many answers.
Mm-hmm.
Like early on, I think most of us like slavery. Then, I don't know. Sometimes you want to organize religion. Sometimes you don't have your religion spread enough to make it worthwhile. In the later part of the game, you want things like free religion and free speech and all that. That's that middle part that's, I think, is where you move your civics around the most.
I have been in free religion, I think, only like four times in Beyond the Sword because I tend to not get to mass media and I want to keep my apostolic palace to be able to end wars or start them up. So I want to keep as many votes as I can.
Yeah, I really like organized religion. I rarely move on to theocracy or anything like that because I think that's stupid. I don't know why. But I also really like free market. I think that does a lot of good things for your money making.
I need it for my corporations. I literally have not been in state property at all in Beyond the Sword because it cancels out corporations and
yeah,
I love Sid Sushi. So I buy state property, you know? I eat up the expense because it's worth it. I use pacifism sometimes when I want great people.
I don't do pacifism very much because usually something bad will happen right after and I'll have to change. Serfdom's good sometimes.
I hardly ever use that. I never remember that it's there. Spiritual is my favorite trait, so I very often play games where I don't have to worry about anarchy.
Oh, that's a good one.
You know, so I can do the organized religion pacifism thing. I can even go to theocracy if I want to make units with two more XP just for a little while, because I'm doing a little bit of, get a little power boost time thing here. I'll swap into hereditary rule if it's somebody's favorite civic to get them to do me a favor or whatever. I love being spiritual.
I sometimes end up getting stuck in my civics. I forget to update them, so I get stuck in hereditary rule and organized religion and serfdom for a really long time before, I could have used something else there for a little while, but sometimes I just forget. I get too wrapped up in other things.
Or I build the pyramids apparently only for denial and great person points purposes because I forget to actually use it till, 1200 AD when I built it in, 800 BC.
Yeah,
done that.
I've done that before too.
I like hereditary rule. Mercantilism at times, if you start an industrial era, it helps get the first great people, which starts adding to the essentials of gaining speed in that era if you have an era start. But I really haven't learned to master the religion aspect of the game as well as I should. In fact, most of my games are on the ladder and in multiplayer, so it kind of frames what's useful for a short game. I may be playing more single-player games to get better, but playing humans in short time periods creates its own bracketing. It's very different than a long game played in single-player.
Well, yeah, it must be totally different because for diplomacy in AI, religion is so much of it. And for humans, all it would be good for is the civics and culture.
Right. I generally don't have time to be building missionaries because somebody's standing at the door with a big stack of something.
Yeah, especially with the Apostolic Palace and Beyond the Sword, it can really have a lot of power. Not the palace, but religion. It always did. It always has been able to cause wars, but now it can literally stop them, or it can make almost the entire world join in on a war that's already happening. It's crazy. I like it for the hammers and for the get-out-of-jail-free card. Stop the AI from trying to do a diplomatic victory on me. I've never had them try. I have actually let them get the Apostolic Palace a time or two. I usually don't. But I have heard on the boards about people that have lost to diplomatic to the AI, and that's got to be annoying.
I don't think I've seen the Apostolic Palace in a multiplayer game. Maybe in an epic game, but not in a...
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
A two-hour special.
Most useless unit.
Warrior.
Explorer?
Explorer's pretty worthless.
They can't even get Woodsman 3, can they, to be the good new medics?
I never build warriors or explorers, because I can get archers really fast, and there are other things I can do. Use spies and things.
I think scouts are useful early on, because they can let you see the land, but then there's no reason to upgrade them to explorers or to even keep them around. For me.
Totally.
Once I know the map. And explorers, it's like, well, really, what is the point? But I guess some people use them for medics.
Yeah.
But I use a chariot.
Well, I use warriors as back city placeholders in under the monarchy settings.
It's a sign of honor and great respect if my capital is guarded by my original warrior at the end of the game. My people are so confident in him and his vast knowledge that he's gained over the years that he controls this powerful city. He's and him alone in his, you know, loincloth and club, he is gonna guard it.
Units in general.
I usually do start out just with my archer, though. I like the defense bonus that the warrior doesn't have. I build elephants for mascots.
They're so cute, and they make a great noise.
Yeah, so I'll put them in my cities just for mascots. Say they're way after the tech is no longer useful, and just because I like them.
They have to name them and put them in the zoo.
Yeah.
How come we don't have zoos in this game?
That's right. We should have zoos. National Wonder should be SeaWorld and San Diego Zoo and stuff.
Somebody will mod it.
Sounds like a good idea.
I think some of the UUs are really pretty. I love the jumbos, but like I think immortals are pretty. I love how the impies dance. I think some of the UUs are prettier than the default units.
Yeah.
I love the immortals and then how they spin their little, I don't know, spear thingies or whatever after their combat. You could tell how much history I know and everything. And my husband gets mad about one unit. Maybe it's the immortals that he thinks shouldn't even be mounted.
Yeah, that's right. They shouldn't.
Yeah, every time I'm playing as Persia, he's like, immortals should not be mounted. I'm like, no, baby, they rock, because they get defensive bonus and everything. He's like, I don't want to hear about it. They shouldn't be mounted. Because I don't care about a sword block. See, it's a game, and I want to play it. But...
It sounds like my husband.
Yeah. Every time the topic comes up on the boards about do you want realism or do you want game balance, you know, usually about the Romans and is their unit too strong. Like, I want balance. I wouldn't know if the realism is correct or not if it hit me over the head.
And then there's my husband. But the Romans were too strong, so game balance doesn't matter.
Well, at least Gus isn't creative organized anymore. That was a little ridiculous.
That's true.
Technology routes.
it's a very bad start, I research the region map tech. And I learn it very quickly on turn zero, and I get a map that I like better. Which a lot of people think that that's totally lame, and they're allowed to think that, but I just want to have a game that's fun. And sometimes it's fun to see what I can do with a map that I kind of think is crappy, but sometimes I just want a game that I think is doable. I play by mood. Every game is by what mood I'm in that day, you know?
Yeah, there's sometimes when you want a challenging start, and there's other times you're like, don't do this to me.
If I'm going to stick with it, it depends on what way it's crappy. Maybe I want to get Stonehenge really early so that I can get more land and hopefully less of it will be crappy. Because I'm not going to be able to go to war with people, because I'm me.
Yeah, where I've had my capital looks like it's going to be in a not-so-great food, it's not going to grow as well, I'll automatically start researching along, like, bronze working and iron working. It's like, where's the metal so I can grab someone else's city? Because mine sucks. Or if you've looked out, explored a little bit, and all the territory around it also sucks, then that's even more important.
I always push for archery, because like I said before, it's kind of my pet tech. I don't like warriors. But if you're playing with the EDU, the Celtic archer is a girl. So that's kind of cool.
Mm.
She's a nice redhead Boudica wannabe.
Does she have only one, you know, what? Or?
Oh.
I know, you'll have to look at that yourself.
I'm sorry, I had to ask.
The top two reasons Boudica led in that poll.
No, they're not Amazonian women. They're Celtic.
Yeah, that's so. Name it.
Yeah. Ladder games, you're dead if you don't go bronze first. At least you have to know where your metal is. If that doesn't turn anything up, then you look to your land for a quick food source. If you have bronze, then you can chop your first settlers and everything out real quick. I think the multiplayer format is kind of guides your choices. About five or six techs down come a rational go for a religion.
Yeah, whereas in a single player, you're going to be on religion and probably food at the beginning if you don't have a bad start.
So I guess the general route is bronze, something food. If you get your warrior, then you put that out. But he's got to have something to do, so there's no sense in building him first, although some people swear on building their workers first and leaving their cities empty.
Yeah.
But my luck in single play is to have the AI barbarians come in and wipe me out.
Restarting a map.
I think I've done that a couple times.
Or do you stick it out?
I don't stick it out if I'm not in the mood.
So true. Once again, another woman answer.
Well, also, I play a lot of Hall of Fame Gauntlets. I had to because I was a total reloading addict from way back before I think some CFC and Apolliton readers were ever born. From the days of NetHack and Rogue. I started playing the Gauntlets because with their mod, you can't reload or the games are ineligible. And there, you want to get score. And I'm not a milker and I'm not really competitive. But if the game totally, if I lose a city to the barbs early on, then I'm not going to recover. And so I just start over for that. If it's going to frustrate me in a non-HOF game, then I restart. But if it's, okay, the AI has out-teched me, and I don't know what I'm going to do, then I'll stick with it because it's fun to see what happens. Usually. Sometimes I'll save it and stick with it later because at the moment I want to bash my head against the wall.
Yeah.
But it is fun if I pull myself out of a hole. Instead, if, not when, I don't always manage it.
Yeah.
Like I said before, I'm capable of losing at every level.
It's a special talent of all of ours. Favorite map types.
I really like playing on big and small.
I don't think I've tried that one yet, but I rather like Terra because if it's going bad on the home continent, I have an escape route. Just get to astronomy and run.
Terra's fun too. Yeah. I got on Terra kick and that's all I played for a long time.
Terra is really fun as Joe.
Oh yeah.
Right, he's the one with Carax.
Oh yeah.
That's wicked fun. I like big and small because I really like sushi now.
In single player, do the AI know there's a land out there to race for?
There was a thread about that on CFC, and I don't know if they know where it is, but they start out the game knowing how many sea tiles and land tiles there are, and they're programmed to build X amount of boats eventually if there's X amount of sea compared to land. So they'll find it eventually. but I don't think they're programmed to beeline for astronomy if it's a Terra map in that sense. But if you're Joe, it's fun because you don't have to wait for astronomy to go over there. The problem with it is you have to make sure that your first cities aren't so good that you want to keep them. And then you get to the New World and you turn your original cities into a colony. And then how do you get to optics fast without getting wonders that you don't really want to lose? But that's half the fun. And I like big and small because of sushi. And I like Inland Seas a lot for One City Challenge games because you have trade routes to everybody really early. If I'm playing a Hall of Fame game where I'm going to be mostly peaceful and I'm picking my leaders, I really like that because we can all get to know each other. And I like that for Conquest One City Challenge games because everybody's reachable. I don't try those in Vanilla. I do those in Warlords. And if I don't get the Great Wall, I restart. Because having barbarians come when I'm trying to conquer the guy halfway across the world on the other side of the map that doesn't wrap around is a pain in the you-know-what because I don't have time to deal with the barbarians pillaging my improvements while I'm over there killing that guy.
The other thing I like about Terra is that it leaves part of the map unsettled, whereas normally when it's on there, it's just on a large continent, every little corner is settled, and there's like nothing left. Because the AI will settle anywhere, even in the middle of the tundra, where there's no use for it.
Yeah, it's true. That's why I like Terra too, because I knew that there was more land to expand.
Naval warfare.
To be really honest, I don't do it that much because I'm not really very good at it. I think if I practice more, I'd be better, but...
I love naval attacks. I think those are better for me than some of my land projects.
Yeah, the naval battle is more interesting now in Beyond the Sword. Because before that, I don't think the AI was like, oh, there's a sea out there I can fight in? You know, they didn't really notice it, but I've had a couple of games where it's been Joao and who else? Well, I remember the one with Joao, but he came with a whole stack of the Carracks and other stuff and was just, like, coming along. I totally didn't expect it, and he landed a bunch of troops with him because I couldn't see into the stack that there were troops, too.
Yeah, Zhuam has really good powers with that.
Yeah, and I totally had to build up extra navy because I had both him and Ragnar trying to fight off, and it was nice, though, to actually see them using it.
I ended up rushing to astronomy anyway because I have to have privateers. It's, you know, a moral imperative, so...
Okay, I love privateers.
Totally!
There's nothing more fun than randomly attacking the people that you say you're friendly with. That is the best. Man.
And you get great general points when you're not at war. I have had games where I've gotten 3 great generals before I've ever been at war with anybody. You cannot beat that. Now, why do I need great generals if I'm not really planning to go to war with anybody? I don't know. Nobody says I have to play this game logically. It's just fun.
It's just fun.
But I love privateers. They're awesome.
Yeah, they're my favorite. I'll just go and whenever I see anybody else's boat, it's like, oh, I'll attack you, and I'll attack you.
This is for beating me to a wonder 1,000 years ago.
Sometimes the AI gets a little too smart, and I think they figure out who it is.
I had one game where I attached 2 great generals to privateers because I was just having way too much fun, and the AI was totally slow, and they were getting slower because I was blockading them. So I put 2 great generals on different privateers and gave them both leadership, so they got me more privateers. And then, who was it? Some leader started researching chemistry, the forbidden technology, because they had astronomy already. But my privateers were so promoted they could handle the galleons. But this guy was learning chemistry. I was like, no, I don't think so. So I declared war on him so that I could keep earning XP when I was not at war. And my husband was like, dude, that's not very logical. And I'm like, it doesn't have to make any sense. So I killed him before he finished researching it. And then Pakal started trying to learn the forbidden technology. So then Pakal had to die. But then I realized I had kept so many cities over on the continent that those two shared that I was just going broke. So I was like, well, okay, I must admit I've actually won this game because I kept them in the Dark Ages for so long with my incredible privateers. But you can totally cripple them if you want to.
Oh, it's great. I really like the aspect of the backstabbing. And I don't do this in real life with people that I like. But in the game, man, I'll tell you, the backstabbing, like, oh, we're so friendly with each other, and I just killed, like, 3 your ships.
That's actually my sig on CFC is, oh, no, those aren't my privateers. That great general I just got while I'm not at war, I popped it from a hut.
It's like something like that. Because I just love how they're like, well, she's the only one with astronomy, the only one with chemistry, and she keeps getting great generals. I don't know who those privateers belong to. And I've had games where one guy knows astronomy and one guy knows chemistry, and they're friendly with each other, but they don't trade them.
That's good.
I'm like, I love you. Thank you so much. I could keep having my party. You guys are dumb, but I can keep having my party. And I've been trying to learn how to actually deal with it when they actually do get to frigates. Oh, no. And learn how to do the naval war thing, and that's why I was doing the Future Star games. And it's kind of fun. And it's bizarre because you have to deal with subs and with stealths and with normal ships. And, like, if you have stealths on the score, they won't protect your stack at all unless the other guy has stealths so he knows that your stealths are there. And then you have to be able to see the subs for the same reason.
Now, if only we could start with the privateers earlier.
No, because then the AI might have them when I do.
Oh. I hadn't thought of that.
That might be bad.
Yeah, it's no fun when they start getting privateers.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know I've noticed that they don't really blockade you very often either. Whereas I did that sort of Ragnar in that game we were talking about with the big naval attacks, and I actually stagnated his technology because I blockaded him for so long. But the AI doesn't do it. At least I haven't observed the AI doing it. Let's put it that way.
Well, pirates started early. Caesar was captured by pirates and ransomed.
That's right.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yep.
Which Caesar?
Julius. In historical writings, he was captured by pirates, and when he returned, then he started doing more of his well-known things.
How fun! I had no idea.
See, if you were a history buff. Just kidding. So that alone thinks that we should get pirates way, way earlier.
Well, difference between pirates and privateers.
Yeah.
But maybe they're just barbarians with boats.
Yeah, I was about to say that's probably with Firaxis. We say, well, you have armed galleys. There's your pirates.
True.
Yeah, but I should have my own.
Well, we have ninjas now. With the spies, so we need to have ninja versus pirate battles.
That's right.
There's a diplomacy game every Friday night, and we're always looking for subs. If anybody wants to come in, it starts up around 6:30 Eastern time, whatever, if it's standard or daylight. Do show up in the lobby and indicate your availability on the forum.
Well, I heard the lobby is not such a great place to hang out.
Well, then post in the Poly thread and say what your name is and that you're available to sub. It's different because they play it on epic speed, so everything takes forever.
Do you enjoy that or does it drive you nuts?
There's practically no time to go into your city screens to see what tiles are active or anything.
I would go crazy. I wouldn't have time to obsess over things.
Maybe you don't want multiplayer then.
Take your 20 minutes to inspect.
Well, then join the Diplo group. They obsess over everything. Each other, their sieves, their relationships.
But if I saw a place with pigs and iron together, would you hold my hand when I wasn't allowed to put a city there? Yeah, that would be hard for me. I would need moral support if I couldn't actually put a city there.
And name it Pig Iron North.
I'm going to start naming those cities after you, so you might hear
it's
about
just too
it.
Fine.
The password for the Diplo games is Diplo.
Well, now that I know.
Now that you know. Please do join us. It would be fun to have more players.
Random leaders. I usually do.
Especially for multiplayer. Do you ever do that for multiplayer, Nolan?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah, Saturday game is random all the time because people used to, before BTS especially, would complain if somebody got the Inca. Oh, he's got the Inca. Or you'd have the game where everybody, if he picked, everybody would be the Inca. You know? That's why, that's where the random thing in P kind of got started. And I got so used to doing it that I do it in my regular game unless I specifically want to play somebody.
I'll play random sometimes, but that's usually if I just do random everything. I just want to see what will happen. A lot of times I'll just choose.
I usually choose my own leader because most of my games I start with, okay, today I feel like trying out X. You know, I feel like going for diplomatic, or I feel like doing OCC, or I'm really going to try to make myself go to war, or I feel like doing culture. It doesn't always work out that way, but I almost always start with something in mind, so then I'll pick a leader for that.
I like to change my name according to my civ. So I'll choose my leaders for that. So like things like, oh, my favorite, Charlemagne. It usually has Anna in it because that's my name. But it's like Anna Robbie or... We were actually reading through all my save games last night. My husband was like, oh my gosh, like all these random... I think that's funny. But... Oh yeah, Washingtana.
Washington.
How about the rest of you? You guys do anything weird like that?
I do that sometimes.
I always change my name because I always keep so many saves that if I use the default name, I'd have to always get that, replace it, and I'd be like, well, no, because I can't remember if that was the one I wanted to go back to, da 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 da. So it has to be something that'll help me remember what game it is. So it'll be something with, like, a change leader to be K-Mad, or I'll just put K-whatever, or something that will remind me what I was trying to do.
I should probably start doing that.
The future start dual maps, I was KFD or something. And I have way too many that start with K because of K-Mad. I really ought to just start them with other letters randomly so that if I need to go through and find something, not by date but by alphabetical, I can sort by name and actually find it in there because I have 50 zillion to start with a K. But I don't do things logically.
Saving your games.
Late game, my turns will take so long that I save it halfway through the turn because I've gone through my cities at this point and now I need to do XYZ with moving my troops if I am at war, and I don't want to lose the progress I made when I went through each and every city to make sure they were pretty and doing the right thing, because that took me 20 minutes. So you end up with a lot of saves when you're obsessive compulsive like that.
Does anybody go back to a previous save and fix things up or do things differently?
Depends on how frustrated I was when I saved.
Yeah. I think once I got attacked by Ramses when I was really not prepared, I went back to a previous save, buttered him up the whole time, and the whole game was smooth with him. He never attacked me again, but I guess it depends on the game.
You know, there's some games when you found yourself backed into a corner or something, and there's just not really a good way to get out of it without practically restarting the game. And at that point, you'd probably rather just play a new game.
I'll save them. If there's a point that it could go either way, I'll save it with a name that reminds me of that. This time I actually do get logical and put AAA at the front of it because I want to remember where those are. And I make sure the name reminds me exactly what it is. Because those actually sometimes do go back too late after the whole game is done and see, you know, do the alternate what if I had declared war at this point or gone for a diplo at this point, da 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 da. But usually not the time. But if it frustrates me, I'll save it and go do it later.
Yeah, a couple of times I've been tempted to post it in a thread on a Polton because I see people do that where they're like, what did I do wrong? Then people would tell me what I do wrong. It's like, well, maybe I like playing that way.
I can't post any of my games just because of all the signs I put and all my city names. People would be like, okay, we knew she was crazy, but we need to call a psychiatrist for her. She's totally insane. It's fun for me, so I don't want professional help. I mean, from a psychiatrist. From the boards, it's fine. I like the help I get there.
I'm not suffering from insanity. I'm enjoying every minute of it.
Exactly.
You and your Candyland empire.
Mm-hmm. Queen of Peepsville.
That's awesome.
And then if I'm taking pictures for the forum specifically to take pictures to post, I'll rename things. I don't know how we got into it, but something about the best tiles you could make on CFC that you could engineer in World Builder. And somebody was saying if you put floodplains in the water and farm them after biology with a lighthouse or something, that it was the best tile you could get with a levee and a river and stuff. And I'm like, no way, dude. You take an oasis and you put pigs on it and you make it a plains style instead of a desert.
Okay, and it rocks because you put pigs on some of them, and some of them you just make an oasis with a plains and a town on it. And that totally rocks too because you get the shield and you get a ton of commerce because you get the three from the oasis or the two from the oasis, whatever it is, and all the stuff from a town and the extra food. So it rocks. And I posted a picture of this insane city that I had made, and I had totally faked it. So I made my civilization name be Cheater Cheater Pumpkin Eaters. I forget what my leader name was, but... And so then when I hovered over the tile to show what the output of it was 100% Cheater Cheater Pumpkin Eaters. And then I posted one this morning, actually. I was running some tests to see how the UN votes are totaled up. The debate was whether it's over population by city size or by city size. If a city is size 25, does that count as 25 votes? Or if a city is 25, so that counts as XYZ million people, and a city of 3 counts as a lot less, then is it based on that? And it's actually based on 25 is 25. But I was proving that to myself, even though I was sure it was true. So I named myself Highly Scientific Tester for those pictures. When I posted the picture of the vote result, Highly Scientific Tester votes for Highly Scientific Tester.
Of course, they're highly scientific.
I just have to make myself giggle.
I bet the guys changed their names just to make them their own, so we can't make fun of them for their silly names. Because you're right, like, everybody posts their screenshots, and it's their name. They're like, yeah, right, I think they just changed it for that turn when they took the picture.
Yes, because their actual name in there was like, all your base belong to us or something. That's another thing I like to rename conquered cities. All your base belong to me now.
All your base belong to me.
Yes, I spend too much time on the internet. Why do you ask? The Modding Front.
Do you ever play the mods?
I don't.
Play Final Frontier some.
I know, my husband does.
I play them sometimes, but I'm usually playing straight Civ. It's not that I don't like them, because I do like them. I play Rise and Fall, too, but it's...
Oh, hubby likes Rise. It looks too complicated for me.
This is why we had to stop talking about mods on regular podcasts. None of us play them.
And there's so many things I still want to try in the normal one. And I know if I try that one, then I'd want to try a million things because there's all the unique victories, or I forget what they call it.
Yeah.
But the victory conditions for the different civilizations. So I would want to try all those and never have time to do anything else. That would take a year and a half. But it's really nifty.
I belong to a group that has been getting into Final Frontier. Now, that's a whole different animal. The spaceship, the city screen's different. Everything's different. It feels like a whole new game.
Well, I play the EDU mod because my husband worked on it, and he likes it when he sees that I'm playing it. That's just different because the ethnically diverse units, and they all have their different areas, and that's kind of fun.
They changed some of the unit graphics in BTS. Did they use any of that stuff, or did they do their own stuff?
Yeah, they did use some of the EDU stuff.
Cool.
They used the Babylonian one because they did it by eras and by regions.
Uh-huh.
So they used the early era, like the ancient ones. But they didn't use any of the later ones, and that's what made it into the mod, was the later versions. Oh, and the earlier ones. My husband's telling me, is he standing behind me?
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know, I just play.
Well, that's cool, because they use some of it.
On Civilization Revolution.
I don't know what to think. Part of me is like, well, you know, that's good. That means that the franchise is doing well. It'll stick around. And part of me is like, well, are they going to dumb it all down always because of that? So, I don't know. Trying to be optimistic.
I think it will lose a lot of the fun things, the aspects that we really like when we play, I think will get lost. But it's interesting to see what will happen.
Well, I just hope it doesn't affect ours. I hope they don't go, oh, well, let's just sell them all like this in the future.
Oh, for real?
Oh, I don't think they would.
I think the fan base would freak.
Yeah, they know.
I would freak. The way they made the announcement for it, before they announced it, people were thinking it would be an expansion, but it wasn't worded that it was an expansion. It was worded like a new product in the Civilization line or whatever. I was worried about it that it was going to be Civilization, the MMORPG. And posted that on CFC, so people were, you know, running with that about different things that you could do.
No.
You know, I wasn't serious, but that's kind of fun to think about.
Oh my goodness.
And then they announced Beyond the Sword, so everybody thought that was it. And then they announced Revelations. It was like, oh wow, weird. That too, huh? Yeah.
Well, I think a Civ MMO would get dumbed down without any help from the developers.
Can you imagine? That'd be wild.
Oh my gosh. My husband's a little bit upset about it.
Oh, about Civ Rev, because it's simpler isn't necessarily dumber. It's for people like my mom, who can only play for a few hours a day and doesn't have time to get into a long game and the rules to her. She has to remember so many other things that she can't remember all the Civ rules and stuff on top of it. So it'd actually be great for her. And I know not everybody likes it, but you know, it might not be so bad.
Yeah, I think it will have its own following. Probably not the same following as Civ has.
I'm all for more people having fun, and I'm all for the company getting more business and sticking around for longer. I'm just being paranoid about my own self-interest. Just like I am with AIs, you know. Obviously, that's not just game behavior. That's real life, too. I admit it.
What's that? Firaxis is researching consoles, and you need to declare war on them?
The forbidden technology. But, you know, if they stay in business longer, then that's good for me. So more profits to them.
Yes, and we do have our own preview over here at Poly going on that we can all read about later.
Oh,
Dan made me mention it.
Civilization 5 wish list.
Let us inspect cities before we decide to keep or raise them.
Yeah, that would be very handy. Especially because it also give you a certain pause for a minute so you can realize, oh yes, holy city, don't raise it.
Uh-huh.
I was doing so well in a game and then I accidentally raised a holy city because I didn't realize. And then, yeah, I ended up losing badly.
Major new things, I don't know.
So you'd like the option to have a turn to examine the city and then be able to raise it?
That would be really cool.
Yes, that would be very good.
Well, yeah, because sometimes I'm just silly and I forget to check if it had any wonders. And it won't even let you zoom back out on the map to remember where it is in relation to other cities.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
I think most of the ideas that come into my head are like future era stuff, and that's probably because I want to play Alpha Centauri again. I want underwater cities and stuff.
Oh, me too. That was too fun.
Yes, I know. It's not really a Civ thing, but I still want underwater cities.
I want to be able to bribe Civs for their votes.
Oh, yeah.
And then have them not always vote the way that they said they would. That was cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, and even in the modern era, I don't see why you couldn't plant kelp farms or something along the coast.
Fish farms?
Yeah, exactly. Or even if there was a way to do that with a land tile. I don't know. Maybe we need something more like the call to power improvement system, I guess, if you were trying to reach an ocean tile in the middle of a continent.
Yeah.
A lake. You know what I mean.
Well, in thinking of stuff that could go well with Chinese Empire, I thought about fish farming. They've been doing that for years and wondered if they'd ever put that in as an option in the games. You can do that in lakes and what have you. Didn't see it implemented, though. All you can do is make a wish.
History lessons.
I have learned some history from the Civilopedia, and I have to tell you, I don't have the game open right now, so I can't quote it to you, but the best Civilopedia entry in the whole entire game is for the, what is it, Ballista Elephants? Whichever you use, based on the war elephant? Is that the name of it?
The Khmer.
That Civilopedia entry rocks.
I'll have to go read that one again.
Yeah, I know people tend to go into it. You can't really learn exact history from Civ. Some people say it's supposed to recreate it. Some people say it's not supposed to recreate it. But sometimes you see things and you understand things all of a sudden. Like when they first put strategic resources in Civ 3, and I was playing on an Earth map, and everybody was getting into fights over, let's guess, the Arabian Peninsula where all the oil is. And I'm like, all of a sudden, a lot of things just became very clear. Or the stupid wars you get into because somebody has a resource and you don't.
Yeah.
It's like, now this stuff I read about in history where people went to war over this thing, which I thought was stupid at the time, now I totally understand why.
Yeah, so true.
Well, I was playing on the Earth map, and okay, this shows my knowledge of history and geography, but I'm serious, I have none of it. Is it the New World, the Americas, it doesn't have any horses?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm somebody on the Europeans. I forget who I was, actually. I think I was Louis. But I met the people over there, you know, Monty, and I think it was Roosevelt. And I felt really sorry for Juana, because his starting position sucks on the map, if you've seen it. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
And he needed horses. It was totally unfair that he didn't have horses. So I traded him horses, and I traded him this and that.
And I was, like, complaining to my husband that I didn't have some other resource that shows up only over there and not over in Europe where I was. And that it wasn't fair that he didn't have horses over there. And he just looked at me like, you are insane. The world was not made to be fair as far as where resources are. You don't get bananas in whatever place. And you don't get horses over there. And you don't get incense over there. And you don't get spice over there. And I'm like, but everybody should have healthy cities. How am I supposed to have a healthy city and a happy city if I can't get spice until astronomy? That is not fair. I like to have big, healthy, happy cities, and I need my wine, and I need my bananas. He just is like, okay, honey.
I need my sugar and my bananas so I can have bananas foster.
Exactly. Thank you. I'm bizarre because I don't really like to go to war, which is usually the best way to go get more resources. But I like to have a lot of resources because I like to have happy and healthy cities. I hate to see the toxic green cloud for unhealthy cities. And you can see it from outside. You don't even have to be going through your cities to notice it. So you're horribly punished for having not enough health. So I should learn how to go to war, maybe, but what can you do?
It's fun.
Get all your aggression out.
Call in today.
301-637-659. 301-637-POLLY.
44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLLY.
Or you can Skype us at the Polycast.
Log on to the official Polycast website at polycast.apolton.net.
I think we've hit quite a few new things here. Or maybe when the guys listen, they'll realize that women aren't all wuss players.
Except for me.
Yeah, we'll show you a feminine playstyle.
You might get made fun of for some of your peeps fill stuff.
They already knew that. I posted about it on CSC, so.
Oh, okay.
But see, now Apolloton will see how really crazy and silly I am, and I'll post less times than, you know, what's the average of 34 in 8 years? I'll have to post even less now over there. But that's okay. I can't deny being a silly person.
Isn't what the game is all about?
Absolutely.
I think so.
I have a Civ-related old lady story. When Civ 3 came out, I had special ordered the Collector's Edition box. And my dizziness issues were very, very bad at that point, and I was actually using a walker. Now, I'm not that old. I was, we'll say, around 30 at that point. I think I wasn't yet 30. If I was, I was not much over 30. But anyway, I was using a walker like the 90-year-old women do. And I went to the mall to go pick up my Civ 3 game. And, of course, the guys working at the store, like 18 or 19 or whatever, and they're looking at me because, obviously, I'm not as old as you think of people using walkers. So I said to them while I was picking it up, the facelift went a lot better than the hip transplant. And they laughed so hard at that they gave me their employee discount on my collector's edition Civ 3. So that was my best old lady Civ experience, getting money off for my walker.
Thank you very much for the invitation to participate.
Yeah, thank you. This has been...
Yeah, I've had fun. Great talking to you, ladies.
And we have absolutely enjoyed having everybody. Me especially. I don't get to talk to other girls about Civ very much.
Aww.
Well, we should get together again.
Yes.
Well, if you're ever bored on a Saturday and we're recording, just Skype Dan and go, can I join? Because he'll love to have people.
I don't do anything on Saturdays. Are you kidding?
Well, there you go.
Especially days where it snows all day long, like today.
Just load up Skype. See if Dan's recording and go, can I come? Can I come?
No, they'll talk about things I don't know anything about.
Oh, that's okay. Imran does that all the time.
Yeah. True. I tried really hard not to giggle. Did I make it?
I think you did fine.
Yay.
What we're missing is Dan's giggles.
Dan figured we'd have fun today and that would come across and he might have to worry about losing his job to us. And I said, no, that's fine. We'll keep you around for the post-production stuff. Don't worry about it.
You can do the hard stuff. Editing? We don't want to touch that.
You could do that. You know what? And we'll double your pay.
That's right.
Double his pain? What?
That too.
Okay, fine. We'll triple it.
An all chick grudge matchup.
Careful how you word that. You're going to get the boys too excited. We pretty much covered them, just sort of hit all the topics from the side, as rather as going straight at them, which is actually, I think, better.
Oh, well, I'm sorry, official host, but I was actually asking Nolan.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I think the guys will listen to this one because they want to know what we say.
Have you been listening in? Did you hear all of our secrets?
Don't say that on the air, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. We're not talking here.
I'm interested to listen to what the edited format will be with this one.
Yeah.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Good tidings to you and all of your kin. Good tidings for Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Record date December 1st, 2007. Soundtrack courtesy Civilization IV, Warlords and Beyond the Sword. Copyright 2007, Appleton Civilization site at appleton.net.